Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Today on Quick Slants, the podcast, we have a very special podcast for you. This was actually previously recorded, but I don't want you to think this is some stale bit of news that we're trying to pass off as a new podcast. This is a live podcast that I was a part of down in New York, went to Brooklyn earlier this week to sit down with three other podcasters, a psychology professor, a crime reporter, and a sports psychologist to talk about Aaron Hernandez. The Oxygen Network is putting together a two-night special this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 7 to 9, both nights, 2 hours each night. So this thing is long, but is absolutely loaded with little nuggets that you did not know about the Aaron Hernandez story previous to viewing this thing. It's called Aaron Hernandez Uncovered, and we got together for this podcast down in Brooklyn to talk about Hernandez's life, to talk about how he interacted with his teammates and coaches, and if anyone could see things playing out the way they did with Aaron Hernandez. All kinds of stuff on both trials, both the Odin Lloyd murder case, as well as the double homicide case, which came after for Aaron Hernandez. So again, this is a story that obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you know about. We've talked about Aaron Hernandez and his trials as they were going on this very podcast. But again, there's going to be some new information here in this special, Aaron Hernandez Uncovered, brought to you by the Oxygen Network. And take a listen to this podcast that we did sitting down with some people from all walks of life who have some interesting perspectives as to what went down with Hernandez.
I'm Darren Karp, host of the podcast Martinis and Murder, and welcome to Oxygen's Facebook Live event, Aaron Hernandez Uncovered. Oxygen has brought an unbelievable panel together to do a deep dive into the world of Aaron Hernandez. Over two nights, Oxygen will be bringing the complex, violent world of his life to television. This is a life that reads like Greek tragedy. From modest beginnings in the working class town of Bristol, Connecticut, Aaron Hernandez rose to greatness in college football and the NFL. His triumphs, however, were ultimately undone by his personal demons. Dogged by a criminal reputation and unsavory associations, Aaron Hernandez wasn't drafted until the fourth round, earning the league minimum. But after two amazing seasons, he had established himself as one of professional football's best tight ends. At the age of 23, he had signed a $40 million contract extension with the Patriots and was a new father. But just as his idyllic life was coming together, Aaron Hernandez's dark side tore everything apart. Violent assault, sexuality, and CTE are just some of the new insights Oxygen is exploring over this two-night event, starting March 17th at 7. To help unpack the details of the life and death of this fallen star, I'm joined by podcasters Michael Britt, host of The Psych Files, Phoebe Judge, host of Criminal, Dr. Andrew Jacobs, host of Sports Psychology Today, and Phil Perry, host of Quick Slants, the podcast.
When you just look at Aaron's story in a vacuum, I mean, this was a guy who seemingly had everything at the time of Odin Lloyd's death. He had just signed a big contract with the Patriots. Birth of his daughter had just occurred. He was recently engaged, and he seemed to be enjoying life. When I covered him early in his career, he was kind of, in some ways, the class clown of the Patriots locker room, joking around with teammates. He did have friends on the team. I remember doing stories where Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski, they came into the league together. They played the same position. They would give each other a hard time. Well, I was better at this event at the combine than you were, and I was faster than you, but I was stronger than you. And he had good relationships in that locker room, and everything seemed to be coming together. And we spoke to him after some of these really big events in his life, after signing the contract, after the birth of his daughter, who was actually born on his birthday. And he was as proud as ever in some of those moments. But going back and looking at some of his comments, it's really interesting because he would say things like, I know now I can't be reckless Aaron anymore, after both instances. And it was almost as if he didn't trust himself with all he had been given. He knew the ramifications of some of these responsibilities that were being heaped upon him. And it sounded like he knew he needed to change in some ways. We obviously didn't really know what that meant at the time, but looking back, it's almost eerie.
What do you think was going through Shania's mind, you know, seeing her sister sort of side with her fiance, Aaron Hernandez, of course, at the time, and being on the other side of it? What do you think was going through her mind?
One of the things that I noticed going along with what Phoebe said is, and the special points this out much later, is how very different these two women are.
Right.
Shown, and of course we don't really know them, but the special said, Shania dressed somewhat like a stereotypical school teacher or a librarian, whereas Shayana was much more elaborately dressed. They just seem, and of course they never said anything to each other. The tension must have been unbelievable.
You can sort of sense it in the room, you know, when you're watching the special, just how polar opposites of the side that they are. Do you guys think Aaron Hernandez should have taken the stand at trial?
I don't think so. I think, in you know, Phoebe maybe could speak to this with a little bit more expertise, but from what I understand, if somebody in that situation were to take the stand, it's up to the jury to decide, okay, well, who's more in the right? Is it the person who's trying to defend himself, or is it, in this case, the government, the state? There's sort of an interesting interplay there. And so that, I think his legal team in the first go-around probably did the right thing in not having him take the stand.
Do you agree, Phoebe?
Well, I mean, I think it opens whoever's on the stand up to a lot of questions, you know, because we aren't supposed to lie on the stand, and so whoever's up there has an obligation to tell the truth, and you don't know what the prosecution is going to ask, and so I don't know what the defining factor was in not having him take the stand. I mean, there are also people he might have said, you know, I don't want to do it, you know,
right.
And maybe he was so distraught and upset about the whole situation that his defense seemed, I don't think it's smart if we get him up there. I don't think we know what really happened behind the scenes.
Right, we don't know, but we know he was a very charismatic, such a likable guy. It might have worked out if he had gotten up there, in terms of the jury really taking to him. On the other hand, we know now that he was suffering from a severe case of CTE, which means that his ability to think straight and, you know, comport himself in that situation might not have been good at all. So I think ultimately probably wasn't. I mean, it was probably a good decision not to have him.
Interesting. Well, Jose Baez was actually Aaron's defense attorney in the double homicide case for which Aaron was ultimately found not guilty by the jury, as they didn't find sufficient evidence to convict. To this day, Jose maintains that Aaron was in fact innocent of these charges.
This time, the defense had the secret weapon, Jose Baez.
This team compared to the other one. They fight, and Jose, he doesn't like to lose, and he fights hard.
I believe in redemption. I wouldn't be where I'm at if it weren't for second chances. And I sometimes think people make mistakes and they regret them. Doesn't necessarily mean they have to pay for them for the rest of their life.
Jose Baez seems like the guy who can talk the talk and walk the walk.
Okay.
How crucial was the acquisition of Jose Baez to Aaron Hernandez's case?
Well, he's a very confident guy, as
yes.
you point out. And I think at one point he says that there simply is not enough evidence to even think about him being guilty. By this point, I'm like, wow, gee. I mean, I've already seen, I think that came at the end. I've already seen about an hour and a half of this. I mean, I'm going, wow, that's convincing. Oh, boy, that's damaging. Oh, you know, the evidence to me was mounting up. Not so good. But he's got that kind of charismatic lawyer-type approach where he, you know, says it and you kind of believe him. So
I think he did a really good job in terms of having the jury question the credibility of Alexander Bradley, who was the star witness in that
right.
second case and was in the car, you know, allegedly at the time of of everything that went down in the South End in Boston with Aaron Hernandez. And he was very well prepared. The state did a good job on that end. But he was a guy who had a criminal past himself. And I think Baez not only highlighted that, but highlighted some of the statements that Bradley had made in terms of all the mechanics of the shooting and how it could have gone down. And, okay, well, how did Aaron reach over you? And
that was a really good point.
Was his whole body outside the window, or was it just his arm? And are you really remembering this the way that you say you are? And between that and Bradley's background, that did enough, obviously, in the eyes of the jury to, you know, to allow Hernandez to get off as not guilty.
Do you think if Aaron had Jose Baez for the Odin Lloyd trial, it would have been a different conviction? Or do you think the evidence was so overwhelming?
I think a different conviction. Yeah.
I'm all interested to hear what Phoebe would
say. Well, I don't know if it would be a different conviction. I think that what Jose Baez had is he'd represented a number of high-profile clients. And I think that no matter what, when you have a murder trial that has a case that's widely known in the public, it changes it. It changes some aspects of how you defend someone. And so I think that I don't know if it would have changed it, but I think that Jose Baez did have experience in cases where there was just a lot of public attention. And there are a lot of murder cases which don't get that level of attention. And so the person who's on the stand doesn't have any reputation that anyone might know of in the outside world. Of course, the jury gets to know it. But so I think that's maybe something that Jose Baez could have brought to that first trial.
Is having a good lawyer and evidence either for or against you, like, do they hold the same weight? Or is it really about the evidence, or is it more about the lawyer that you have representing that evidence?
I mean, evidence doesn't lie. Right. I think it can in some cases, but strong evidence is, I think, always going to be your best bet. But certainly a well-informed lawyer, I mean, that's why we have lawyers.
Sure.
Because we recognize that we can't do this all by ourselves, you know, for a number of reasons. So I think a good lawyer can have a great difference in any case.
Well, we know that Aaron's life ends in tragedy with his suicide. How likely do you guys think that Aaron's suicide was his final attempt at providing for his wife and child in the light of the Massachusetts law that voids convictions for which appeals have not been exhausted?
This is a really delicate one. Obviously, we can't know, but it sounds like, and it's been reported that, you know, he was maybe asking about this law in particular before his death. And I think, I don't know, but financially, could that have been playing in his mind, you know, if, okay, I get off for one of these charges, will all of a sudden my family be able to benefit from that financially? Because again, he had signed a long-term deal. That deal that he signed would have actually carried him through this upcoming NFL season with the Patriots, which is crazy to think about because it seems like it happened so long ago, but it was a long-term deal. It was a lot of money, especially for somebody who got drafted in the fourth round where he wasn't given the amount of money that, say, a first or a second rounder would have been given had he been taken in those rounds, which is probably where he should have gone based off of how talented he was. And so maybe that was playing in the back of the mind. Hey, can I take care of Shay? Can I take care of my daughter if I am let off of this charge? And if that was the only way he could foresee that happening.
There's obviously data that football players who've had CTE have committed suicide. You have Junior Seau, Dave Dorson, but neither of them killed anybody else. They just killed themselves.
Good point.
So obviously, of course, that's what suicide is. But in this situation, obviously, I think you have to look in this situation with Hernandez's background and all the variety of times that there were issues with him where he got in trouble. But nothing was ever done. The thing that concerns me is why wasn't anything done to help him? And that's the thing that bothers me the most about this. We don't know. Let's go back to high school after his father died. Were there incidents where maybe he did get in trouble we don't know about because he was the star football player? Were those swept under the rug because, well, we don't want to damage his career? I have incidents. I deal with this all the time in my practice. I just talked to a volleyball coach 2 days ago who had a young man who robbed her store for the third time. And he has a college scholarship offer to play basketball, and she wants to turn him into the police. She's had people come to her, don't turn him into the police, you're going to jeopardize the scholarship. She goes, I was just robbed of $5,000. you know, where does, and when is he going to take responsibility?
Right, where's the line in that?
In these situations, there's a young man who went to my son's high school who had several DUIs his senior year in high school. But he got a full-ride scholarship, and he ended up playing. He wasn't ever punished in high school because he was a star of the basketball team. He went to college, got kicked off his first team, went to another college, and then left that team. If he had been disciplined for the DUIs, maybe that made a difference. So I think you have to look at the fact, with a lot of athletes who are star athletes, not all of them, obviously, but there's a small minority of athletes who are very, very good but get away with things because of the stars of the team. High school coaches don't want to discipline them because they want to lose.
Right.
They want to win. They get to college. These same situations happen. There's thousands of dollars being paid for these young men and young women's education. What's being done for them psychologically to help them out to deal with the adjustment? And it's a big adjustment.
I do think there's so much more information out there about mental health. There are so many teams that I think are better educated about those kinds of things now, whether it's at the college level or at the pro level, definitely, that I think there are measures. I think we're in a better place now in 2018 than maybe we were 20 years ago when it comes to those kinds of things, and is there still room to grow in that regard?
Definitely.
Sure, and I'm sure you could speak to that, but I think when it comes to getting players help, especially at the pro level, where there's so much invested in these guys and there's so much money involved, it's an investment really back in the team when you're willing to spend that kind of time and energy and effort. And I think the smartest teams in any professional sport really take care when it comes to those types of things.
Well, Urban Meyer has said that he was looking out for Aaron's mental health and, you know, treated him like any other player, almost like a family member.
Well, I think the issue comes down to what Phil was saying, especially, okay? I started working as a sports psychologist 37 years ago, and I've seen changes. When I first started, no one wanted to deal with this. It's hocus pocus. It's a bunch of witchcraft. We don't want to deal with this. Now you're seeing most professional, not all, but most professional teams have someone on staff. And I think it's important with the adjustment that these young men make from high school to college. I think colleges should have mental health professionals, sports psychology specialists for especially football and basketball teams, as well as soccer, baseball, softball, it doesn't matter. But be available to work with the athletes and help them make that adjustment from high school to college. And then going to the professional level, especially with the money and all the people that start to become friends who they never knew before, have an adjustment period where they learn how to deal with these things. And the mental side, I always like to say you can have two athletes who are physically the same, but the one with a stronger mind will come out on top. And that's not just in terms of their performance, it's in terms of their behavior as well.
Well, there's a lot to unpack, obviously, with Aaron Hernandez himself. What is a lesson, and I want all of you guys to answer this, that we can sort of take away from this tragedy? What should we learn from this? Michael?
I knew I shouldn't have sat to your left.
Yeah, you're starting it off, man.
The biggest lesson? Well, I'm encouraged when Phil says that things are changing. So you are not seeing as much of what we would refer to as toxic masculinity.
I don't think so. But again, I'm not a player, I'm not in there, and so I don't understand it fully, but from what I can gather, having covered the league for 6 or 7 years now, I would say it's in a better place now than even when I started.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, I guess my coming into this, I'm thinking we still don't bring up our boys right. I think we still bring them up to be very to stay away from their feelings, and I'm sure you would agree with that too, because who's going to go see a therapist, or even a medical doctor, a boy and men, you know, we're just, and that's why we have Me Too, and that's why we have Time's Up. I mean, we're just not allowing men to have full access to their feelings. So that's what I think we have learned from this.
Very well said, Phoebe.
Well, I don't think we can speculate on what was going on in Aaron Hernandez's head, or how free, I mean, something happened, and I don't know when it happened, but something happened to make this terrible chain of events go on, and I think it impacted a lot of people. It's sad for Aaron Hernandez, but it's also incredibly sad for the victims, you know, and for the families that he's impacted. So I think something happened, I don't know what it is, we can speculate all day long, but he didn't get the help that he needed and that might have stopped everything from happening.
First. And let me just interrupt to say that there may have been some...
Now you're not done. Now
you're not done. Yeah. We did not let Phoebe speak as much as we should. Us three men, we were just talking away. And so I apologize.
Is that toxic masculinity?
I don't know.
Could have
been.
Yeah, well, that's why you're sitting next to Darren down there.
Yeah.
I agree with what Phoebe said. And obviously, as a psychologist, mental health is my profession. I feel we don't deal enough with that. And we're getting better at it. But I think the psychological issues in our country, you know, we have all kinds of mental health issues in our country today. People need to be dealt with better. And I think teaching, as Michael said, teaching about feelings, expressing them, learning to understand them at younger and younger ages needs to be better educated for boys as well as girls. People, I mean, athletes are people. They get dressed the same way the rest of us do. They may put on a uniform instead of work clothes, but they do everything the same way. And so I think learning how to deal with their feelings is just as important as it is for everybody else. From what I think we've learned from this is we need to learn more about CTE. We need to learn more about emotion. And I think we need to help young athletes, young people, when they have issues and problems and get them help and don't push them aside or let them get by because they're superior at something. Deal with emotions and feelings, and that's something we got to do a better job of.
I just remember when Hernandez was arrested following Odin Lloyd's murder, just being shocked, because this was a guy that I had talked to in the Patriots locker room that a lot of us in the media felt like we knew a little bit, but we obviously didn't know him well. And I think it's really hard to see signs, even though now we look back on it and maybe we can try to pinpoint signs here or there, different spots in his life. It's really, really difficult to do that. And so I guess if there's a lesson, it would just for people to listen. And for people, if they're having issues the way Aaron was, maybe to feel more comfortable just to reach out for help, because he had all kinds of resources at his disposal. We've been over it. Between all the money involved that he was paid, everything, you know, all the support he had from college through the pros, you know, I think for both sides there was something that could have been done there, but it's really hard to say. It's hard to know, and it's hard to spot these things because we see these people and we think we know them, and we really don't.
You can't force someone to talk to a therapist, but you can encourage them and try to give them reasons to help them out with that. And I think that's where we can do a better job of that.
And that's what we should be encouraging.
Yes, definitely.
Well, that went by quickly, guys. I feel like I learned a lot. We're just actually scratching the surface of this sad saga. I'd like to thank our panel of podcasters for joining us. Thank you guys so much. We have definitely started a conversation worth hearing today. There are so many more layers of the story explored in Aaron Hernandez Uncovered that I would love to go over. But unfortunately, we're out of time. I'm sorry. And Oxygen's two-night special event will hear from his fiance, Cheyenne Jenkins, and his defense attorney, Jose Baez, who provide really unique insight into the complexities of Aaron's life. There is just so much to sift through as far as new insights and discoveries are concerned in this two-night event. I want to thank all the panelists for being here today and offering their incredible insights. There's really more to discuss than you can imagine. And it all starts March 17th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Oxygen.
There you have it. Interesting discussion. It was great to be able to sit down with a handful of people with some different worldviews, some different backgrounds, and find out how they felt about everything that transpired with Aaron Hernandez's life on the field, off the field, and with that story. I want to remind you guys, Aaron Hernandez Uncovered, 7 o'clock Eastern, Saturday and Sunday night. It's a two-part special, 2 hours, both nights. You're going to learn a lot. I know I did. I felt like I followed that case and that story really, really closely. I know a lot of us did, and I still learned a ton. There's a lot of new information here in Aaron Hernandez Uncovered that you have never heard before. So make sure you tune in to Oxygen, 7 o'clock Eastern, both Saturday and Sunday night. You won't regret it. Now, I want to remind you guys as well, before we let you go for the weekend, to subscribe to QuickSlants, the podcast. And make sure you tell your friends to subscribe to QuickSlants, the podcast. That's how we grow this thing. That's how we get more listeners. That's how we can pour more into our show. If we find out that you're linking up with us and you're getting this straight to your phone, straight to your Apple Podcast app, Stitcher, however you listen to these things, we want to be able to deliver this right to your fingertips so that you can listen to these things as soon as they come out. And the more people we can get on board, the better product we can provide you. So make sure you go do that. Leave us a review. Leave us a comment. We love to hear those. We even read them on the podcast. So if you want to give us a shout, if you want to criticize us, if you want to praise us, really whatever you want to do, we're open to it all. We'll read those as the podcasts continue to come out throughout the offseason here. Obviously, no shortage of things to talk about when it comes to the Patriots. So thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you guys next time.